turn to Matthew. We're not going. Let's go to Exodus, the 20th chapter. If you remember in the movie, how many of you here have seen the movie I Am Now? A good portion of you. The context of the video that we're going to be seeing today had to do with the young lady who in the movie ends up, has a child, and the child was as a result of an affair that she had with what turned out to be her physician, which she had gone to when she had cancer. And she actually became so obsessed with him that she kind of stalked him, and he began to push away from her. And in the end, if you remember, she goes and she confronts what goes to his wife and apologizes to her in the movie. But I think that this particular one, the topic of this particular one is about adultery. And if you look over in Exodus, the 20th chapter, and let's look at verse 14. It says, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." So my question to you all is what is adultery?
Well,
being unfaithful to your spouse. Okay? Any other definitions? So if it's not adultery and you have a relationship with someone out of the marriage relationship, what's that called?
Fornication.
So I guess by definition that either one of those two, if you engage in them, is probably not seen as a good thing. Okay. When you look we're talking, in this particular case, we're talking about physical adultery, physical acts. Are there other types of adultery?
Well, the Bible talks about spiritual adultery and spiritual fornication.
Okay, spiritual adultery and spiritual fornication. What's that?
Not being faithful to God.
Not being faithful to God. Okay. Now, I think what's important about answering that question is that when we look at the Ten Commandments, who gave children Israel the Ten Commandments? God. And when he gave the children Israel the Ten Commandments, what was it about? Why did he give it to them?
For their protection and their safety. Some kind of rules to live by for society.
Okay. And were there other elements of it?
So that they know that they were perfect, that they knew that they needed something else.
So that they knew that they weren't perfect. Okay.
Have a healthy relationship.
What's that?
And have a healthy relationship with them,
yeah. In all those examples, all those are exactly right. I think the last one I want to focus on a little bit, because I really believe, as we talked, that the Ten Commandments are really, God, he wanted to have a relationship with the children of Israel. He chose them. In fact, we kind of talked about this also a little bit, being about like a little bit of a marriage contract, wasn't it? This is how we're going to have this relationship. This is how, and it talks about God as being a jealous God. He had so much love for them, and he wanted to give some boundaries. He wanted to give some rules against which, they could define the relationship. But also, as has been pointed out, to show us that we're not going to be perfect. And that to have a relationship with him is not something that we can do on our own accord. I think it's really kind of interesting, because when we look at this and we talk about physical physical adultery. I think the spiritual adultery is extremely, it's a parallel topic that I don't think that you can separate, because ultimately this is about relationships. Relationships that are either working or relationships that have gone bad. Turn with me over to Matthew, the fifth chapter. Brother Steve, can I get you to read verses 27 and 28, please?
Ye have heard that it was said by them of old time, thou shalt not commit adultery. But I say unto you that whosoever looketh on a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart.
Any comments on that?
Well, I think you're we're in the Sermon on the Mountain, and Jesus talking to his disciples, basically saying it goes deeper than just the natural act. I mean, it's what's in your heart. Heart matters.
So in this particular case here, in this fifth chapter, and it says, but I say unto you that whosoever looketh upon a woman to lust after her hath committed adultery with her already in his heart. What causes somebody to lust or to even contemplate having a relationship, either in the marriage relationship or outside the marriage relationship?
I think it's just human nature. That's the way people are. You know, the flesh versus spirit.
Okay. Others?
Can you repeat your question? Sure, I know what you're asking.
What causes people to look upon another person with lust and contemplate even having a relationship outside of the marriage, or even if you're not married, to have a relationship outside of a married relationship? Human nature? Is it a sign in a marriage relationship? Is it a sign of an unhealthy relationship that you may be in? Can it be?
It could be.
Could be?
But it could be just you're an unhealthy person and you want to act upon whatever impulse you have.
Okay. Which is human nature, which goes back. Okay. So the example, and we're not going to... in fact, do you have Genesis the 39th chapter? We're going to play Genesis the 39th chapter. And this was part of the lesson. And what this is Joseph. Joseph had been sold into slavery by his siblings. And he ends up being sold again when he gets to Egypt, and he goes into the house of Potiphar. And Potiphar is a very rich person, a very powerful person. And this is the story of what happens to him in that household. And Potiphar had entrusted him with his entire household, and he put himself in a position to where he was pleasing his master. But something happened in this relationship that was going on, and this is what I want to talk about. So people would have.
Chapter 39. And Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master the Egyptian. And his master saw that the Lord was with him, and that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him. And he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put into his hand. And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house, and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And he left all that he had in Joseph's hand, and he knew not aught he had, save the bread which he did eat. And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored. And it came to pass after these things that his master's wife cast her eyes upon Joseph, and she said, Lie with me. But he refused and said unto his master's wife, Behold, my master wotteth not what is with me in the house, and he hath committed all that he hath to my hand. There is none greater in his house than I, neither hath he kept back anything from me but thee, because thou art his wife. How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God? And it came to pass, as she spake to Joseph day by day, that he hearkened not unto her to lie by her or to be with her. And it came to pass about this time that Joseph went into the house to do his business, and there was none of the men of the house there within. And she caught him by his garment, saying, Lie with me. And he left his garment in her hand and fled and got him out. And it came to pass, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and was fled forth, that she called unto the men of her house and spake unto them, saying, See, he hath brought in an Hebrew unto us to mock us. He came in unto me to lie with me, and I cried with a loud voice. And it came to pass, when he heard that I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled and got him out. And she laid up his garment by her until his lord came home. And she spake unto him according to these words, saying, The Hebrew servant which thou hast brought unto us came in unto me to mock me. And it came to pass, as I lifted up my voice and cried, that he left his garment with me and fled out. And it came to pass, when his master heard the words of his wife, which she spake unto him, saying, After this manner did thy servant to me, that his wrath was kindled. And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, and shewed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison. And whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper.
Was there adultery here?
On her part.
On her part. Who got trapped in that? What was her reaction? She actually had a desire in her heart. Said that she looked upon him physically. And here she was. She was married to one of the most powerful men in Egypt. And so she sought on multiple occasions to entice Joseph into a relationship with her. What was Joseph's response?
He didn't want to be unfaithful to his master. The commitment that he had made, whether it be marriage or whether it be a commitment to, person, or whether it be a commitment to God. I mean, he saw it as being unfaithful to take something that was his master's.
And in that relationship, she continued to pursue him. But who did he keep his eyes upon? Kept his eyes on God. Because continually through those verses, it talks about how God continued to bless him, and those blessings typically to us in this world are a result of our faithfulness to God and keeping our eyes upon Jesus. In this particular case, it was upon God the Father. But what happened? Because he stayed faithful, things work out for him. Eventually, but not then.
Okay. Probably didn't go the way he saw in his mind it was going to go. Mm-hmm. Some things he didn't have control over.
But did he begin to cover up what happened? Why didn't he cover up?
Kind
nothing to cover up.
Yeah, nothing to cover up. Okay, real key and important point, because think about what did she do? What happened to her? She kept pursuing him, and he kept saying no. What was her reaction?
She became spiteful.
Yeah.
And Joseph could have just as easily have turned around if he had gone running off at that point in time and said, look, she just took my clothes from me.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
he could have gone off and told what she was doing
mm-hmm.
at the same time, and then she turned it on him. So.
Yeah, she felt rebuffed. And so ultimately, the only way that she was dealing with being rebuffed was to cast, and that's how she was going to get back at him, in that sense. Are there other examples? and we'll come back, because, you know, in the particular case of Joseph, he actually ends up in prison. Did it waver his faith in God? God continued to bless him there, and ultimately he found himself in a position where he was basically number two in the kingdom of Egypt, number two of the Pharaoh, in spite of the things that happened. And as we've talked about many times in the book of Ecclesiastes, the time and chance happens to all. And so, what's set in motion, there that we sometimes can find ourselves right in the middle of the crosshairs and our lives can be impacted by the choices and the sin. And in this particular case, what's really important about this story with Potiphar, if you go back to what we just read and Brother Steve read, and that in the act of adultery, did it ever happen physically? No. But where was her heart? And that's why I think it's a great comparison as it relates to what was there in Matthew that talks about. That in her heart, that's what she wanted to do. She was focused, and she did everything she could. But she didn't have a person who was willing on the other end. The destruction of that. How about another biblical example? Can you think of where adultery had a big impact in the nation of Israel?
David.
Okay. So David is as we've talked times, and those the youth that listened to us when we had this lesson back when they were in high school, the story is that David goes out on his veranda, and he's looking down and seeing that poor hind. He looks down to one of the other verandas and homes in the area, and he sees the Sheba, and I said, called the hot tub. She was out in her hot tub. She was bathing, and he becomes lustful, and he has a relationship with her. And ultimately, there's a child that's born. And adultery, the sin of adultery, is something that has impact far beyond the act itself. Even if it's what is described in Matthew, that in the Oregonian this morning, can anybody read that headline right here?
Ripples in a pond.
Ripples in the pond. The sin of adultery has ripples in a pond that are incredible. And it really struck me because, and this is not about adultery, but the principle is exactly the same. It says, in 24 days last November, Oregon saw an inexplicable spike in murder and suicides that killed 14, including two children under 10. Yet the violent end to one family is no simple domestic matter. The crime lasts beyond to a neighbor, to a boss, to a doctor, to a community leader, to a surgeon, to a probation officer, to a friend, to a neighbor. A year after the shock had ebbed, the ripple effect endured. And that principle is exactly what happens in the case of adultery. Is because what happened in the case of David and Bathsheba once all of a sudden David finds out that he had been engaged in adultery, that he had made a mistake, what did he attempt to do? It was just between two adults. It appears as though it was between two consenting adults. What happened in that story?
Committed murder.
Who did he murder?
Her husband.
Her husband. What other ripple effects happened as a result of this?
His David's firstborn son was killed, stillbirth. Well, it wasn't quite a stillbirth, but he was sick for a while and then was ultimately taken.
The death of the child that was born out of wedlock?
The impact on his family and his children was incredible. And I don't know, it stemmed only from that story, I don't know, but it definitely had an impact as we see the interactions between his children. One of his sons rapes one of his daughters, and then one of her brothers kills the one, and it just continues to get bigger and bigger.
He goes back to that event. Think about the heartache, the stress, the suffering that went on in that family, both families. Who else got involved in this whole web? You think, if you listen to the story, Bathsheba's husband was on the front line, goes back to the murder. And the other people that got involved in this were the other leaders of the army. How do you think they felt? I mean, what we think is something that's consenting, you know, and we can hide it, has its implications far beyond anything that we can comprehend. When we live in a society today, though, that's very distressing to me. What is it that entices somebody to want to hang? When you go back to this, you know, heart. Well, you know, first of all, what happens is that you know, there has to be some level of lust. There's a physical desire. And think about the society we live in today. Can you turn on the TV? And what's promoted on TV? What do you see promoted? What's that?
They say sex sells.
Sex sells. You look at clothing ads. You look at ads for beverages. Whether they're alcoholic or not. What are the TV shows that are most popular today? One of the number ones was Desperate Housewives. What's easily accessible on the internet today? Pornography. These are all underlying societal issues that tempt and cause us to have lust, one of the other commandments to covet. And that's one of the challenges when you talk about adultery. And that's why Christ, I think, said, you know, he explains it and clarifies it here, if you do it in your heart, you've committed it. It's that attitude. One of the things that we didn't see in the video that it talks about, it says, pastor who talks in here, he says he likes the motto of saying to himself is to fast forward the tape. Think about that. I think that's a great bit of advice. And it's a bit of advice that has its application not only to adultery, but it also has its application to all the choices we make in life. Is to say, if I make that choice, fast forward, what are the consequences? What are the implications? Can you anticipate the ripples in the pond?
Society wants to tell us that there are none. But it's so untrue. The New Testament tells us that if you commit fornication, you're sinning against your own body, and there's no way for it to not have an impact.
In fact, is it Ephesians 5, the fifth chapter?
Mm-hmm.
verse 30 and 31. It says, for we are members of his body. And whose body is this? This is the church. It's being talked about here. Of his flesh, of his bones. For this cause shall a man leave his father and mother, and shall be joined unto his wife, and they shall too, or they shall, and they too shall be one flesh. So if you're in a marriage relationship and you have, and you commit adultery, and you're one flesh with your spouse, how do you think your spouse feels?
Betrayed.
What else goes through their mind? What do you think? Inadequate? Where did I go wrong? You know, when we talk about spiritual adultery, it's the exact same thing with God. If we are one flesh, and someone, you know, at this point now, my actions carry over to the person that I'm with, that has an impact upon them. How often do you fast forward to ask for the consequences of your choices?
Not often enough.
Not often enough.
And I think part of it is that we're not honest, and we somehow work in our mind that we can hide it. Adam and Eve did that. David believed that he could hide it, and that was part of the difficulty or the problem that he faced in the ripple effect. It's kind of interesting in that article, but there was also a cop who was convicted about 20 years ago with his children, and the police officer that initiated was having an affair with his wife, and it just recently came out that that's why this man was put in jail, and they laid this cop that accused him of molesting his children was having an affair with his wife. This guy spent 20 years in jail because of that. Sin, that adultery, and that was just right here in Vancouver, right?
There's deception, there's lies, there's darkness, and the farther you get into these webs of deceit, the more lives that are impacted, and there's more stories and subplots. I mean, these are the types of things that people love to write movies and books about. But typically, these books and these movies are written around real life situations and real life hurts that really happen. Say something?
You know, maybe we don't talk enough about the hazards and the consequences of it. But even when we do talk about it, people think it won't happen to them. And we certainly don't see in our society people talking about the consequences of extramarital sex, whatever form it takes. And you're talking about the results of the consequences to a marriage, and often as much the physical act of adultery has an impact, but it's the emotional betrayal also. I mean, don't even have to have the actual physical act to commit adultery. I mean, you can be unfaithful to your spouse and staying short of that, but it's still breaking your marriage vows. You just don't talk about those kinds of things, I think.
And how do we put ourselves, how do we avoid the temptation? I mean, we've talked about many things. We've talked about society, advertising. We talked about availability of pornography on the internet. All these things, you know, put ourselves in the position. So how do we avoid the temptation?
Start with the healthy relationship with God. Even in your marriage, God should be the head of the marriage.
And it starts with a healthy relationship with your mate if you're married. I mean, you have to, it's a it's a work. It's a relationship that has to be maintained regularly. It needs to be that priority one.
We're just turning it away. I mean, it's every temptation is a choice. Think of the difference. Think of how differently would have played out if David had just turned it around and walked back into his room. Completely different story.
And it is a choice.
When we talk about being a choice, one of the things that I'd written down as I thought about this lesson, Blood of Harlem, Blood of Lesson, last Sunday night, on attitude. And exactly what you said, Sister Harlan, is really the core. Is by definition, Brother Harlan identified an attitude as how we think, how we feel, and how we act. Kind of an iterative process. It's something that unfolds. It just doesn't go like this. How we think about a situation translates into how we feel, then we act upon it. And what we want to do in our lives is we want to think the think and the feel part are safe. And that we can put a barrier up and a buffer and not act upon what we think and what we feel. And that's our first mistake. And that's why Jesus said what he said there, is that when you do it in your heart, it's as though you've done it already. You're already down that slippery slope. You've already broken that relationship. In the case of adultery, you've already broken that relationship with your spouse. Same way with God. Goes back to what you were saying. If we focus on God, and we have a right relationship with him, then how are we going to be thinking and feeling?
If you look at the Ten Commandments, they're put in priority. And first is our relationship with God and how we do that. Then our spiritual relationship with the Sabbath, our relationship with our parents, relationship with our fellow man, and it goes on down.
Right.
It's all about relationships and priority.
And I think that's really, really well said, you know, because it is about relationships. The entire Ten Commandments are about relationship, either with God and man or man to man. It's such an important point. And the reason I've been going back and forth here is I thought about, and I think I want to play something here in a second, is that can somebody go back and read the first couple verses for me of Psalms 1:1? I think this is where.
Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor sitteth in the ways of sinners, nor standeth in the ways of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful. But his delight is the law of the Lord, and in his law doth he meditate day and night.
So, blessed is the man who delights in the Lord. And what's the second thing of the, what does it say to do?
And in the law doth he meditate.
And in the law doth meditate. Now, had David applied that, had he been meditating, had he been working on his relationship with the Lord as a leader, husband, every role that he had in his life that he was accountable for, if he had been true to this, how would he have reacted when he looked out his veranda and he saw Bathsheba locked up? He probably would have done this and he would have turned. Don't you think? As Joseph ran the other way. Joseph still got caught. But Joseph was true to Psalms 1:1. In fact, he did basically everything he could not to put himself in harm's way. And that's what we have to do today. We have to put ourselves in a position of not, if you watch all the violence, all the sex, And if you go on the internet and you engage yourself in looking at pornography and those types of things, is that being true to Psalms 1:1? You're being true to something, aren't you? You're being true to the lust of the flesh. There's something there that appeals to you. And things that you get drawn to that appeal to you, and they may be different for me than they are for Sister Harlow or Brother Jeff, but if they're the things that keep pulling us in, they have the ability to compromise our relationship with God if we're putting them above God, and they can become a danger in the relationship of any of the relationships that we have, especially in a marriage relationship.
I think it's interesting that the commandment doesn't say thou shalt not have sex, because God intended sex to be in marriage and to be a good thing, but if we get into trouble is when we take it outside of marriage. And I think we're talking about lust, and I think it's a young people's issue these days too, extreme pressure. And I think when you're talking to young women, it's a different issue probably than it is talking to young men who tend to, yes, we saw his wife, Potiphar's wife, was lusting after Joseph, but it's not, for your young women, it's not usually that kind of a lust issue. It's submitting to pressure from a young man, and it's the relationship that they're about, and it's still just as wrong, and it's still just as harmful to you if you submit for a different reason. And we need to talk about that a lot, I think, in our churches.
Well, you're exactly right, and again, it goes back to that same principle that we talked about before, is that you train the child up in the way as you go. And as we talked a little bit last week about that, when you train a child up, the implication we always gravitate to there is you train them up in the church, you train them up in the Lord, and they're not going to depart from that. That's going to be the example. That's going to be the pattern that they're going to feel comfortable with, and that's what they're going to follow. But principle is true, whether it's good actions or it's bad actions. And if we set that tone as parents, that it's okay for all these things that are going on in society, we don't even talk about the fact. Is that something that we just become conditioned against the things that are happening on TV? We become conditioned against what's happening in our society, you know. And then when we get in church, you know, we'll talk about, you know, how bad the internet is, and we'll talk about how bad the TV shows are. But when we leave here, you know, what TV shows do we watch? What movies do we watch? And I'm not being judgmental, but these are questions I think we have to fast forward and say, what example, what's the ripple in the pond by us? You know, there's sins of omission and sins of commission. And sometimes it's what we don't do and how we don't teach and we don't talk about these types of things. And you're exactly right.
I really appreciate that you brought in this discussion of spiritual adultery. And I don't think it's by chance that Ephesians 5 is talking about the church here. And the ripple effect, think of how our unfaithfulness affects our church. And some of my most important relationships are right here in this room. And those choices affect everyone in this room. And where we go as a church, it can be devastating. One choice can devastate this, everyone in this room.
Exactly right. It can weave everybody in here into a bed. I hope that this works. The video might not be, or not the video, but the sound might not be attached to it. The reason I went back to Psalms 1:1 is because when I think about David, that had he been true to that principle and he focused on his relationship with God, because I've got to tell you, no matter which of the Ten Commandments that we're talking about, if we focus on the relationship, our relationship with God, you know, we put ourselves in the best position not to commit sins. The closer we are to God. And I think about the 23rd Psalm, and I think about David, and I think about, you know, how Samuel called David, or was it, no, it was Nathan. Nathan called David on his sin. Because he kind of convinced himself, like we all do, we all justify and we all rationalize our choices and our behaviors. In the case of David, everybody around him knew exactly what happened. And yet David, you know, was living in that bubble. Nathan comes to him, shares with him, you know, what do you think about a person, you know, who, you know, commits murder, has an affair, and all these things happen. He kind of just laid out all the things and choices that David made. And David's comment was, well, take care of them. And then Nathan says, well, that's you. And it wasn't until that point that we get the sense that David really, all of a sudden, his sin became clear to him in the choices that he had made. And all of a sudden, you know, he had to do that self-reflection. But if you look also at Psalms, the 23rd chapter, which we all know, so the very first of it says, the Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. That speaks back again to that relationship. The Lord is my shepherd. If I'm following my shepherd, my needs are going to be taken care of. But all of a sudden, when we go out on our own, we define our needs. See, God's defined the needs for us. He said he will meet those. But we take wants, and we turn them into needs. Does that make sense? So, you've heard, in hopefully this MP3 song plays, but this is the 23rd Psalm. And it's done by the sons of Korah, if it plays. And listen to it, though. Think about, you know, David being the one that wrote the 23rd Psalm. Think about him in the context of the choices that he had made in his life. And had he been true to the first Psalm, you know, listen to this in that context.
I will dwell in the house
Yeah, I apologize if this lesson didn't quite flow the way that I expected to sometimes. Sometimes we respond easier to putting things together on the fly. But I didn't feel I did a very good job today. But I hope that when you listen to that, in the context of the choices that we make, whether it's the choice, if you're meditating on God, if you have a relationship with God, and you listen to what was said there in the 23rd Psalm, we've used the 23rd Psalm many of the times, that He is the shepherd. He restores our soul. He leads us through the difficult times. We're in the shadows of death. The choices that we make. He says, surely goodness and mercy shall follow me all the days of my life. I will dwell in the house of the Lord forever. When David did that, his store was restored. His soul was restored. The joy of the salvation that he had lost because of the choices he had made was restored to him. So there's a formula. There's a solution to these things. But there's a ripple effect to the choices. And if there's one word or one message that came out of this lesson for me, is to fast forward the choices that you make before you do them and ask yourself, what are the consequences? Who's going to be impacted? We would probably find that there's a lot of choices that we would make, we would do differently. And our lives would be much better, and the lives of those that we've talked about. Thanks, everybody.